Hey, everybody. So glad to see you tonight. Welcome to our April 13th, 2021 breeder call. I think we just hit 9 years of breeder calls twice a month. So quite a record at this point. And I'm glad you guys could join us tonight. If you haven't met me, I am Gail Watkins. And tonight I have the opportunity to introduce the Good Dog Team, and I'm really excited about our new venture where we are partnering with Good Dog to develop Avadog's curriculum even further, better, et cetera. I know that there are many questions on your part about it. So we are setting up 2 live calls in the last week of April, during which we will only address your questions. If you have concerns and questions now, I would love you to email them to us at info@avadog.com. Maybe Steve will put that in the chat for us so that we can understand and make sure that we address and maybe actually deal with, because I'm not sure I have all the questions straight in my head about what's happening. But without further ado, I really want to introduce my friends and the people that I have been advising and connected with for the last 3 years. So we have on the call Kat Matlube, the head of partnerships and legal affairs at Good Dog. And we have Monica, Judy, Nate, and Michael. And I am so thrilled to have everyone on board. I'm going to turn it over to Kat for just a few minutes so she can say hi to you guys.
Thank you so much, Gail. Thank you so much for inviting us here this evening. And thank you, everyone, for giving us a few moments of your time. We are just absolutely over the moon, honored, humbled beyond words to be able to, you know, have someone, I would say someone like Gail's expertise, but there's no one quite like Gail with her expertise. So we are over the moon to be bringing that level of expertise with respect to education into kind of the Good Dog world and in furtherance of our mission, which is to build a better world for our dogs and the people who love them. For those not familiar with us, I see a lot of familiar faces. So hi. For those not familiar with us, we are an online community that is committed to celebrating and supporting dog breeders, providing education, promoting canine health. And we help potential puppy buyers gain access to education and then connect directly with breeders who have passed our screening and comply with our standards. And then we also have shelters and rescues on our site. So that's just a bit about Good Dog. And we are just, like I said, you know, so happy to connect with all of you we haven't, and hope this is just the very beginning of, you know, of a friendship and lots more amazing things to come. So thank you. And we're super excited.
Thanks, Kat. I am so glad to have you guys on. And again, everyone, we will address your questions, concerns, et cetera, at the end of the month. I'll get the emails out a little quicker this time. It was a challenging month to try and get them out, but I will do that probably tonight or tomorrow. And so you can sign up and make sure it's on your schedule. We'll do 2 calls, 1 during the day, 1 in the evening, probably at 8 o'clock again, just, you know, if you work or for some reason you can't make one, hopefully you'll be able to make the other, and I'll get those out to you. So thanks, Good Dog Team. You're welcome to stay and listen to the conversation. For those of you who haven't joined us before, this is, I won't call it a free-for-all, but it's sort of first come, first serve. And so if you have a question, don't be polite, don't be shy, just unmute yourself and ask the question. If we have multiple people who want to ask questions at the same time, then we'll negotiate it. But I want to make sure that you get your questions answered tonight. So don't wait until 9:28, or we will definitely struggle to get your question in. So ask first rather than later. And oh my gosh, we have so many people on tonight. It is great to see some folks that I haven't seen in a while. I'm so glad you were able to join us tonight. So I will turn it over to you and to ask your questions. Thank you, Aaron. I really appreciate the support about this change. I know it's a challenging change, but it does appear, I will announce to you guys tonight, that the main Platinum College group, the Journey group, will remain as is into the future. We won't be changing it. We won't be shutting it down. We won't be losing any of the information in that. So that should go off pretty smoothly. Yeah, I was pretty excited about it too. So there we go. Go for it. I have a couple of questions that were mailed in, but if you guys want to jump in with a question, you get to first dibs since you are here tonight.
So clarification, you mean the
first not sure one. I have the answers, Trish, but
wait, you don't have all the answers?
No.
That's how I feel sometimes when my puppy people ask questions, especially if it's 7 o'clock in the morning and I haven't had any. Oh my god.
The pre-coffee questions should be a law against that.
The Facebook group will stay together. Yes. Oh, yes. Cool. Because yeah, we, you know, just like our groups in the, you know, not in the high drops, but in the other repro groups and stuff, there's so much immediate questioning going on that it's, you know, sometimes, of course, we have questions because people haven't looked at the material, but, you know.
So it's staying unchanged. It will remain. And so all your search capability and the files and things like that will remain. The I don't have all of the answers at this point. This work is a work in process. So I don't want to act like the whole plan is done yet. So don't even bother asking questions tonight because I probably don't have the answer. One, I'm really tired. And so anyway, we will appreciate your insights and questions because we don't have all the answers yet. We've got things we have to figure out. But I will say that one of the things that I am the most excited about is that one of the main goals in the content is to have a really good search capability, which has been something that we have been unable to do in Avidog. You know, I think we live in a Google world, and so it seems like search capability is just such a basic thing. But when you actually try and do it, it is so much more complicated than we ever realized. So that's one of my goals, is to enable you to go in, put a question in the search bar, just a keyword, and actually get all the content. But I don't want us to get stuck on this. Sarah has a question about color and temperament links. Recently had a buyer asking for a specific color of poodle because she had heard that different colors equal different temperaments. Really interesting question, Sarah. Are you still on? Can you unmute? I'm looking for you. There you are. Can you unmute?
Yeah.
Yes, hey, so what color was she looking for?
So she was looking for red. And she had mentioned that, so I told her this litter, I'm expecting blues, silvers. And she said that she had read that silvers and blues could be more aggressive. What I told her is I'm guessing that that has to do with lines more than anything. Red is not exactly a common color. I mean, it's not rare, but it's not as common in poodles. And so I'm guessing if she's, you know, heard that reds are more friendly or easier to train or whatever it was, that is likely because if a large majority of dogs of a certain color are produced by a certain kennel, they'll have that temperament. But then as I was saying all that, then I was like, well, if a large majority of all the dogs that are red, for instance, are from the same line, and this line creates this temperament, is she right in some aspects? And so I wasn't sure.
Such a great question, and such a good insight on your part that there are lines that pursue certain colors. And so it may not be the color, it may be the line. I think that's a really good point. So I don't know red and poodles specifically, but I know that there has been some research on color correlations with temperament in other breeds. And there is some correlation of more fearful or more aggressive temperaments with color. The one that comes to mind specifically for me are Cockers. And so the brown or chocolate Cockers have in research been shown to have higher levels of fearfulness and aggression. And those two things, you know, are, we usually see a relationship. You know, it would make sense that there are colors that are connected with certain temperaments, but I think across the board, we don't have that information and we don't know that's true. The one thing that I would probably ask her if I was you is to send you her source. Like, where is she getting that information? If it's, I heard that that's the case, then I would suspect that you are right, that it is more line specific, especially in a less common color. But if she has a source, let's share it and take a look at it, because there isn't a huge amount of information on color connected to temperament, but there is some.
Okay. I wondered too, how much I remember faintly back when I was first reading about epigenetics through Avidog, and there was the study on those two rats that were, I think they were littermates, and one was like gray and thin and the other was red or blonde and it was a lot heavier. And I mean, is there any...
Well, interestingly enough, in that epigenetic study, which is a really cool study, the difference was what their mothers were fed in pregnancy.
Okay.
Yeah. And so mothers that were fed a basic mouse diet had produced higher levels of obesity, heart disease, cancer, et cetera, in their offspring. Mothers that were fed supplemented diets that were richer in supplements, in particular antioxidants, produced the leaner, more healthy mice.
Okay.
So, you know, it's interesting in poodles because color is so, I won't say studied, but sought after, you know, so there's not just black poodles. There's dirty black poodles, there's real black poodles, you know, poodles have such a, poodle breeders have such an interesting approach to color. But I just don't think I know, or we know, that there is this correlation.
Yeah.
So with a buyer like that, I'm just going to go off on another tangent. Like, you don't want to sell her a puppy that isn't red because she's going to be looking for
aggression.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So just, you know, it's kind of a thought where if the buyer has this preconceived notion, you know, I see it in Labradors. I honestly don't know how Labrador breeders do it, because so many buyers tend to have an absolute commitment to, you know, I've only had great yellow bitches, or I've only had great black males. And it's just that hyper focus on color as opposed to the puppy. And, you know, I think there is to some degree self-fulfilling prophecy in that. And I would feel that way about that buyer, that how are you possibly going to convince her that she's wrong? Is she a great buyer, or were you just going to?
So she had just sent me a message in one of the poodle groups that I'm in had sent me a message because I had posted, you know, pictures of the parents. And then probably 30, 40 minutes later, there was a post that's kind of blown up in one of the poodle groups asking about this. And so I was just really interested to, I don't know much about her. I didn't even think about that though. So that's definitely something to consider, but.
I actually address it directly on my website because of course in Golden Retrievers, we have Goldens, better gold. Yep. But then we have the variations, the American Red Golden and the English Cream Golden. Mm-hmm. And the English Creams are much calmer and settled and don't get cancer, which is completely untrue. But yeah. I'm not going to try and convince anyone of that, because if I sell them a lovely red puppy, I fear that they are going to be committed. So I actually say on my website, if you are committed to a color, don't reach out to me, because gotcha. It's, you know, I just don't place based on color. I place based on puppy and home.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes. So I think just to follow on, Molly says, I wonder if Paw Prince Genetics gathers any information. So the biggest challenge, Molly, is how do you measure temperament? Yeah, exactly. So Paw Prince would have to do Seabark or one of the really the questionnaires that is considered, or the assessment tools of temperament that are considered very high end, and frankly, Seabark's kind of it. So I've never seen Paw Prince pursuing that. Megan makes a comment, I've always been told that brown poodles are more crazy, hyper, and hard to handle. I have a brown poodle, fastest dog I've ever had. My silver and blues are more calm and friendly. The only red boy I've dealt with had a terrible separation anxiety. So I was actually talking to someone about that this week. So if we take our experience and we say, so what I often see is people saying, oh, I've never had that before. This has never happened before. So I say, how many litters have you had? 3. You know, how many puppies is that? 15. Well, that number of puppies and 3 litters has no relevance to the entire world of dogs and possibilities and what could actually happen. And so I think even if you've been breeding, often people will say, well, I've been breeding 20 years. So my second question is always, how many litters was that? Because in some breeds, you know, that might be 3. And in other breeds, it may be 300. And those are two very, very different things. So if I look at my dogs, I've had probably 2 what I would call cream dogs, they're not English, but cream dogs in my lifetime, I can't make a judgment on temperaments from that few dogs. So I would caution us to not take our limited experience. And unless you are in the seeing eye or guide dogs or one of the major service dog organizations, you probably aren't producing enough puppies to make long-term judgments on. You're going to look at a couple litters or maybe even 10 litters. 10 litters, you're starting to get more sophisticated in your assessments. But has anybody ever heard of the, before you can become an expert, it takes 10,000 hours? Did anybody ever? Yeah. So Linda's read that. That's what's his name? The guy with the crazy name I'm drawing a blank on all the books he's written. Having a name week this week. But he says, you know, to become
Ziegler.
It wasn't Ziegler. It's he's kind of a gawky, silly looking guy, but he's written some great books. It'll come to me during the night. But yep. He said,
Malcolm Gladwell.
Malcolm Gladwell. My husband actually met Malcolm once.
So did I, but I only guessed because he's the only weird looking
gawky skinny. Looking. I know, he's this brilliant genius and he's so gawky looking. Anyway, so Malcolm has done a lot of research on pianists and other experts, and he says it takes 10,000 hours to be an expert. So of course Geeky Gale says, how many litters does it take to gain 10,000 hours? And my estimate was 14. Until you have 14 litters under your belt, you probably can't consider yourself an expert. Well, given that the average breeder leaves dogs within 7 years, there really aren't a lot of experts. But we feel like experts because, you know, we've had 2 litters or 3 litters or 5 litters. So I would just caution you against saying, I look at my dogs and therefore I can extrapolate that to the broader population of dogs of my breed or dogs of a color or something along those lines. Just my little caution for the week.
Can I ask a real quick question just based on something that you said when we were discussing color?
Yeah.
So when we were talking about color, you said that you have listed on your website, you know, that if you're set on one color, don't apply to me because I place based on temperament, not color. That's something that I haven't really had a lot of issues with so far. A lot of my buyers are more, you know, they appreciate that I place based on temperament, not color. However, I have had a few people reaching out to me that want show prospects, and I'm trying to figure out, I mean, what I've been saying right now is, one, this is my first litter, so I'm not at the stage where I'm ready to mentor somebody. 2, I'm not really at the stage where I'm wanting to give puppies to established breeders, just because I kind of want to set my own program up first. But I've been telling people that I still place based on temperament and not on show prospect, but I'm wondering if that's going to come back to bite me and where that line is.
Well, yeah, that's a really good question. I would love people to weigh in because you're in a highly competitive breed. And so, you know, it's one thing to select a show prospect in a breed where many, many, many dogs can finish. And it's a whole nother thing to select a show prospect in a highly competitive breed, especially when you're very early in your breeding career. Because what happens? They don't turn out, you get them back, people are upset with you, now your reputation is shot. And, you know, it's a huge amount of pressure on you. Now you can bring in mentors or you can bring in other evaluators, but it's still a lot of pressure. There are so many things that go into creating a champion. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, hey, I'm not sure there are going to be any show prospects in this litter, you know, or I'm keeping a puppy and I'm keeping the show prospect. I think that those things are perfectly fine to say and are authentic and sort of honest about it. If it is, I mean, there's a benefit to placing puppies with experienced breeders who can come and do their own assessment, because, you know, if you get some champions, that's a great thing for your breeding program. Mm-hmm. And presumably they can do the assessment. So that's an option, but experienced breeders have a lot more power. You'll probably not be in the power position in the litter, I mean, in the relationship. And so it's okay to just say, I don't think there are going to be any show prospects. What's everybody else think? Barb, you've done this a lot. What do you think?
I personally think it would be really great if, I don't know what breed Sarah has, but if she would gather a group of mentors or breeders and you sit around and discuss the merits of that litter, that your first litter, I would consider that an honor to have that with my first couple of, well, anytime, to be honest. I love people evaluating my litters because you always seem to learn something from it that you didn't. Or, you know, you just kind of chalk it up and go, well, no, didn't like your opinion. you know.
Yeah, or I'm disappointed.
Yes, it's a learning experience until the day you stop, you know, breeding, to be honest. So I would take that. Now, if you just bring in one person to evaluate the litter, that gets a little trickier, because I have found that they will have certain things they're looking for in a dog, and it obviously blends in well with their breeding program and stuff like that. And you may not want to go down that path, you know, because, well, some breeds, even like the flat coat, you know, they almost change the look of the breed from the original breed standard sometimes.
Hey, you're talking about gold. You're talking to a golden breeder, talking about changing the standards.
So it's not necessarily always good. Once you get to enough dog shows, you go, woof, I'm glad I'm going home with what I'm going home with.
That's a really good point. So, Sarah, they're usually called puppy parties. I always encourage people to do puppy parties with their temperament test as well. But it is Pat Hastings in The Puppy Puzzle. If you haven't watched that video, please watch it. It's a great method of selecting show prospects, I think. Others can chime in. But if you think you're going to get show prospects, I think Barb's right that you bring in a number of people. Now, I'll have to say, I think one of my very early litters, I don't know, maybe it was my third or my fourth litter, I had a puppy party. And at that point, Pat hasn't published her puppy puzzle. So it was just, you know, the breeders in my area. And at the end of the day, they're all like, yeah, the highest one's a B+. Don't even bother. You know, don't sell any of my show prospects. And I was like, oh, no, I failed. Well, they went on to be search and rescue dogs and master hunters and UDs. And they did a lot of other wonderful things. And I actually have their niece in my home right now. And that was 25 years ago. So you have to be willing to hear the bad news with that. And the problem is, if you've told somebody you're going to sell them a show prospect and it's now 8 weeks or 7.5 weeks and you're doing the assessment and you don't have any show prospects, now you have a puppy and you don't have a home. So up to you how you want to manage that. Trish, I know you sell show prospects, don't you?
A little bit, but you know how we are in Goldens.
I do.
We aren't always very sweet people.
No, we're so not like our dogs.
So, but what happens is people go, I mean, even within it, they'll go to somebody who's like the big winner, that kind of thing. Or there's way too much of that stuff instead of looking. So we've definitely changed to be, as I sit here with a rather large boy, or the largest we've ever had, but there's ones who outdo him in terms of that. And so we've gone to be, you know, and some of them, I'm not sure they could find a bird. I don't know.
Big and hairy is what I say. But that's because Trish and I have been in the breed a long time, and we've watched Goldens change dramatically.
So there's that. But I get some new people wanting to show or really liking in it, and I'll mentor them along. And they may or may not last, because heaven knows you have to be tough to go into the confirmation. You have to make your own decisions on what's right in Goldens. I would bet poodles are probably pretty darn hard too, and labs. But, you know, it's and especially these days in Goldens, I'm a little more reluctant if somebody says is sort of shining me on, like they want a show or something. Are they blind? Are they? And I probably would be in poodles. Actually, I'd probably hate to be breeding poodles, because you don't know what somebody wants to do with your poodle, you know, and you may agree with that or may not agree with that, you know, and stuff. But the thing is, if somebody is deceiving you or shining you on or something for it, or a few litters ago, was it with Annie and G's litter? So 2019, had these people come in, and her mother showed some other kind of dog. they sat right down in the big puppy palace, sat down there and decided and told me that they wanted the show girl, but they weren't going to show.
Oh, I get those. I want a performance puppy, but I'm not going to show.
Yeah, they want the pick show girl, but they're not going to show. And then they kind of went on and off later about, I thought you said that these were champion lines or something. And I'm going, okay, well, their grandfather and I were the top 10 in owner handlers and goldens in the country in 2012. I guess that doesn't count.
That's the nice thing about tollers, eh?
Oh, we have to beg people. So jealous. So jealous.
We have to beg people to show them and do things with them besides just enjoy them being pets. So, yeah. You have to run classes in your front yard so that they'll come and join you and try them out. I'm sure you guys did that at one point in the beginning, but yeah.
So, Sarah, I hope that was helpful. It definitely is a challenge and adds a complexity to breeding that perhaps isn't there if you breed either performance puppies or service dog puppies, prospects, or pet puppies.
Oh, can I add one other thing? I think with your first litter, as you were saying, it's less likely that somebody who's serious about showing or doing performance or whatever is going to really approach you, unless the two that you're breeding from are ones that are really, you know, up there and you bought them as already finished and that kind of thing. And people say, I want out of that. My other reluctance sometimes in confirmation people is you never know. I don't want to sell a puppy that they're just going to say, oh, yeah, keeping this didn't work out in 6 months and it's going to go someplace else. I'd rather that, I mean, it could work out with your pet people that way, but I'd rather that their commitment was to keeping the dog instead of, you know, and although I recognize fully that people, you know, keep dogs for a while and then do it. It's just if I'm placing it, I'd rather them not be doing that. So
I actually have that question in my questionnaire because so many people come to me for top performance dogs. And my question is, what will you do with the dog if it does not turn out? Because honestly, I don't want it sitting in their house while they're off showing every weekend, another dog. And if they're going to return it, I want to be in charge of that and participate in that process. So it's a key question for me. Like, you're a top obedience competitor. What do you do if this dog hates obedience? I want to know what you're going to do with it. So helpful, Sarah?
Yes, very much so. Thank you.
Good luck.
Gail, I have news from Tina.
Yes, puppies?
Yes. Okay, hang on, I'm getting so many.
Tina Roden, if you haven't been following, a very long stage one. Okay. Well thing today.
She had to have a C-section.
Oh, she did.
Yeah, I know. Of course, it's like going to the vet. Of course you get a C-section.
I know, but it did seem like the clock was ticking.
Yeah, I know it was. So I think this was justified. Okay, here's what she said. We had a very stuck pup. First one, and she said he was very lodged. She never contracted. His sac partially busted halfway from waist. Stop texting me, Sandy. His sac partially busted halfway from waist down, legs down the canal, and his face still had sac attached. We made it just in time. She said he came out practically barking. LOL.
What?
Very, very pissed off. So she ended up with 10, four females, six males.
And the first one made it?
Yeah, the stuck one made it, came out barking.
Wow.
But I don't know which way it came out. How can, that brings up a question. If they're in the birth canal, can they get that from the C-section?
Yeah, it takes some work often to get them out. It
the opposite direction. Is that the situation?
That's the situation.
Yeah. All right.
Yep.
All right.
Well, that's great news because if you have not been following Tina's stage one on Facebook, 11 o'clock tonight was the end. Like, she needed to have those puppies by 11 o'clock. And there was pretty much no progress happening. And everything seemed kind of normal, you know, stage one. But when you have a bitch that's not doing anything, you really have to begin to wonder, because a stuck puppy isn't going to show any other way. Basically, it 95% of the time is the bitch is doing nothing. And that's because the uterus knows, I can't get this thing out, so I'm not going to contract. And now everything's come to a halt. The puppies are backed up behind her. And so I always say to people, like, if she's had two puppies and then nothing is happening, absolutely nothing, get that clock on, do your whelping rules and get them in, because chances are something isn't right in there. I'm so glad she went in. I saw the green discharge and could have been a puppy, but I'm so glad she went in. So yay, that's exciting. Yeah, good news.
Good. All right, I got all this information from Sandy. She was texting me and her internet, MacBook, whatever is all screwed up. So she's listening, but she can't talk or do anything. So
hi, Sandy. Thank you for that update. That was great. Okay, so Brian and Deanna say, low Sammy puppy count on ultrasound, how to increase the possibility of carrying them to full term. Did everything with timing and numbers. Girl has happy tummy, walking our distance daily. The question is, anything to add to diet to aid in carrying a small ultrasound? What test to run? Could it be a lazy ultrasound worker again? Well, the latter is always possible. Somebody who really doesn't want to count, that's possible, because there are plenty of vets and techs that are taught that we can't count. So that's a possibility. The test to run is progesterone. And I would say two tests. Monitor her progesterone level. You can do it every week, or if it seems high and when you're monitoring it, it's remaining high, then you can do it every 2 weeks. But I would definitely do that. But I would also go find Sandy Stokes, vet, who does amazing ultrasounds on the the width of the uterine wall and how smooth it is and how wrinkled it is. And I'm pretty sure Sandy's vet's a she, is really good at assessing puppies that are in trouble, or a bitch that's got puppies that are in trouble. So you can certainly go back to your vet for perhaps a more extensive ultrasound to check both the fetuses as well as the uterus itself. You can go look for another repro vet that can assist you with that. But at a minimum, I would monitor progesterone. Other than that, low stress, good quality nutrition, exercise, but follow fit to be tied, not too much exercise. You know, so exercise appropriate for the first trimester, the second trimester, and then in the third trimester, not a lot of exercise. Adventure walks, but not much more than that. So that's kind of it. I don't know, Brian or Deanna, who's on, or if you have other questions. Hey, there you are.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to bring us both in the same room.
Okay.
I'm in the Sounds office. And she's... Okay. Okay, kill your mic. Just kill your sound.
There you go. Phew.
She's going to be on my phone. Okay. All right.
What's the second test? You said two tests.
Two tests. One is the progesterone.
Progesterone levels through pregnancy, either every week or every 2 weeks, because progesterone needs to remain elevated during pregnancy until day 50, a little bit more, it begins to decline. And then a really good ultrasound of the fetuses. Okay. And
ultrasound.
Yeah, but a good one. You know, it needs to be somebody who's really confident in assessing the viability of the fetuses, the placentas, and the uterine wall.
Is Sandy Stokes on the call with us, or is she just someone who's part of the group?
She
posted the name of the vet and the address on the chat.
There you go.
Okay, fine. I'll look it up then.
Okay, so it's down in the chat. I think it's close to the bottom.
Great. Okay.
And Brian, if you guys are too far away, I'm sorry, I can't remember where you live and how close you are to West Virginia, but
we're on the West Coast. We're here with the slave state.
Okay, so post in the Facebook group for to see if there's a repro vet near you that people would recommend.
Okay, because again, we got someone who everyone loves, but unfortunately, it seems they, well, your dog wiggles. And I'm not going to get into that. She doesn't wiggle. We went to an ultrasound and they said, oh, there's six. And then we followed up, like you said before, to follow up again right in the beginning of the third trimester to double check the count, because we really didn't want to do x-rays at the end.
Good job.
And that tech says, oh, there's only two. And then when she gave birth to six boys, you know.
First one was right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, sometimes it's appropriate to get a second opinion and maybe travel further, go a little bit further afield. If you're not feeling super confident, I would try to see if you can find a second opinion just for confirmation, because there are some medications we can give to assist in maintaining the viability of fetuses. We don't want to do that if they're normal and healthy, but if they're not, then we do want to do it.
There's a Facebook group for like breeder friendly, like theriogenologists. It's to help locate like repro vets. And I think Good Dog too has a list of repro vets, and you can also just search for theriogenologists near you. And there's like some kind of certification or list that you can find online with repro specialists.
Okay. Yeah, yep. So Steve, will you search for the Society of Theriogenology, T-H-E-R-I-O, not the, oh, I can't remember what the other option. They don't need to be a diplomat in theriogenology, but people who are in the society that are highly recommended. If you are a Good Dog breeder, there is a reasonably good list on Good Dog that has come from breeder recommendations. And so that is certainly an option. And post on the Facebook group.
Yeah, we're on Good Dog's list. We just didn't want to post that we had puppies until we were dead solid that we had more than the two that the guy claims we only have.
Yeah, exactly. So go into the Good Breeder Center. So log into your account, then go to the bottom, go to the Good Breeder Center, and you'll see on it a list of lawyers, breeder-friendly lawyers and veterinarians.
Okay, fantastic.
Terrific. Well, good luck. Let us know how it goes. Good to hear from you guys.
The problem with having a whole bunch of people come and evaluate the puppies is you get four rabbis together and you get six different answers to the one question.
Yeah, the elephant put together by committees. Absolutely. Okay. So everybody's recommending Malcolm Gladwell's books, and Outliers is a great book. All of Malcolm's are really good. So grab it from the chat if you haven't read his books. Janet says, I breed infrequently, was asked for a show prospect, and while I show my dogs, I defer to more experienced breeders, as this is one of their interests they've expressed to me. Yeah. Marilyn says she kept her show prospect, didn't want her in a companion home. You know, we're breeding for ourselves often, not always, but often. So unless there's an extraordinary reason to place your top show prospect with somebody else, keep it. You know, my saying always is that you can never assume you're going to breed a dog that leaves your home. And so once it's left your control, you don't actually know what's going to happen. Lori says, her hand is up. Here, I think I can put it down, Lori. There we go. I learned something new tonight. Cindy's in one of those tough to finish breeds, really soft coat. I didn't know Wheatons were so hard to finish. They mentor each other, very helpful to have a circle of mentors, especially if you are competing with your dogs. Marilyn, you finish your breeding dogs before breeding them. That would be really nice to be able to do. Some breeds are easier than others. Okay, I'm reading the four rabbis together. Okay, Renee, have an interesting option to breed to the same stud dog, live cover at 6 years, and uses his frozen from 2 years. He's had some fertility issues over the last year, so want to cover with younger semen. I'd love to choose one from the older semen. Any ideas how to do that? Absolutely not. I would have no idea how to do that. Are you on, Renee? There you are. Not a stinking clue. I don't think you can, because all we know how to do is DNA tests, and they're all going to be the same. We can't yet measure canine telomeres. Hopefully that's coming, because that's what you would want to do, right? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You'd want to find that longest telomere puppy that is a show prospect and, you know, has a nose. I don't think you can.
I want to use it as my tiebreaker kind of thing, but at least the bitch owner, she is willing to drive 6 hours and either hotel or camp in my driveway, and said she'll stay as long as she wants because she wants these puppies. And she's like, I'll bring you up to 2 breeding units of frozen too. She's like, breed her all you want. I'm like, oh, okay.
Okay.
So I've made her get me the list of what frozen she has, and I'm going to pick the best of it and tell her to bring it and see what happens.
Yeah. And obviously put that frozen in on the optimal day, you know, LH plus 6.
Well, and that's the problem, is that my girls have not seemed to read the list. So That's true.
They always go faster, right?
Yes. I have had most success breeding on either day of ovulation or day one, which is terrifying. So I'm actually in the process of writing down to Texas. Oh God, his name just escaped me. There's a boarded Therio and himself, who I cannot remember his name, friends at the practice, friends that we've met. And I'm going to just basically send them everything I have and say, okay, what do you guys think? And I'm just going to breed the snot out of her, because I do want, my plan is to breed her this season and then breed her back immediately to my own frozen I have. And that's the breeding I want. I'm proving her with this other dog, but I really want something from the frozen. So I need to figure it out.
Yeah. And you know, you can breed the snot out of her. There's no harm in breeding a bitch a ton of times.
Yeah.
The problem is breeding a stud a ton of times. Yeah. So if you alternate fresh and frozen, are you TCIing? I'm assuming you're TCIing.
Yeah. If I can get a natural, I will. I bred her to this stud dog's nephew, cousin, I don't know, last season, and she stood way better than I thought. And this dog is a bit of a horn dog, so I'm hoping that he can figure it out if I can get natural. But yeah, my thought is to kind of alternate back and forth and watch his numbers. If I see a drop, then I'll throw the frozen in. But I don't know. It's been interesting because I actually have followed it from my clinic through the Therio group. His vet has been posting the anomalies that he's been having, and it got forwarded to me from my boss. She goes, oh, look, there's a bloodhound down here that they're writing about. And I went, that's my bloodhound I'm breeding to. The
owner hadn't even called me yet to tell me that there was any anomalies going on. And I'm like, I text her. I went, so here's this screenshot of what they're writing about your stud dog. What's going on? And basically all the Therios said, we don't know. And they all shook their heads and said, I don't know. You have to breed them to find out. I said, that's ridiculous and difficult.
But at least they're being honest, which is a good thing. Yeah, I would probably alternate, especially if he's got fertility issues. So
yeah, he had extreme swollen heads, was what they all had deemed it. So I,
and that was from a straight collection, not treated in any way, no extender, nothing.
Nothing.
Really?
So that was the question that, like, the Therio group said, we don't know, could be normal. Go ahead and breed them. And I went, but I wanna know more.
I've never heard of that without an extender or without freezing. Yes. Wow. Wow. Well, Renee, let us know.
little brown monsters coming in 2 weeks. So hopefully that's the turn of the tide here.
Oh, I'm so thrilled.
Limp whale leaving.
So thrilled. That was great news. Terrific. Well, good luck. We look forward to following her. Aaron has two questions. Does the sire's litter size have an influence on the litter size it produces? Heck if any of us know. We just don't have those data to be able to tell us that. There is some thought that fertility, so litter size, comes from both sides. But as far as we know right now, it really is driven by the quality of the semen, the fertility of the bitch, and how the two combine. And that's that combination piece is the piece that we don't know how to figure out, that there are good nicks, you know, semen and eggs that just love each other, and there are bad nicks where it is really doesn't matter if you timed it beautifully and his semen collections look good, it just isn't going to work. So it has something to do with either the DNA or other aspects of the sperm and eggs. We just don't know. So I always try to look for males from reasonably large litters and obviously bitches that are coming from a fertile line, but can't tell you if that's the right answer. And then Aaron says, last pairing, 8 puppies, produced a puppy that developed strangles at 5 weeks. Puppy's doing great now, a year old. Should I avoid repeating that pairing again? I don't think so. So puppy strangles is different than horse strangles. Puppy strangles is an overactive or a hyperactive immune system. It is typically a relatively short period in the life of the puppy. Once treated, it usually resolves for a lifetime. It's not an issue at all. So I don't think we have any evidence that puppy strangles is inherited, genetic, a flaw in the line, nothing along those lines. It's a pretty weird and rare thing, but it typically is resolvable. And as far as we can tell, once resolved, the dog is fine for life. So I that would not stop me from doing that same breeding again. If you get 2 in a row, whole different story. Deb saying a friend lost a 2 puppy litter, green discharge, no stage 1 labor. Had to have been stage 1 labor, presumably. I don't know how you
can have a litter. No sign at all. She didn't know until the puppies, until she saw the green and then went in.
Yeah, well, that's still stage 1. You know, stage 1's all that preparatory stuff. So it might be green. It doesn't necessarily have to be nesting and all of that. So often we see a loss of puppies in stage 1, and that green discharge is typically going to be bad news. So I'm sorry for your friend. That's depressing.
Yeah, well, that was just a comment about something like 20 minutes ago. So that's why.
Sorry. I'm going as quickly as I can. Sarah says, I think it's Pais had her first tie with a stud tonight. Yay. Seeing touch tomorrow to confirm ovulation. Terrific. Paisley. Okay, we're moving through Sandy. There's her vet, Valeria Ricard in Leesburg, Virginia. Probably not going to be someplace you want to go from the West Coast. There's the breeder-friendly veterinarians list. Holy cow, I'm behind. Deb asks, would the pup's dad be detected by DNA? Not if it's the same sire, and often not if they are brothers or they are father and son. It can be very, very difficult for closely related dogs to distinguish whether or not a puppy is sired by dog X or dog Y. Sarah says, would you please remind me of the number of days to enter into the breeding diary for whelping windows via LH and ovulation? So Sarah, if you go to A to Z section, I believe it is 1.3, it will say to you what's the date of ovulation and it will produce the calendar for you, or what's the day of LH and it will produce the calendar for you. So go directly into A to Z. Oh, you don't have access anymore. Okay, so the downloaded diary. The ovulation, the actual midpoint of the whelping window is plus or minus 6. It is 63 days plus or minus 2 days. So it's going to be day 61 to 65. If you have LH, it is plus or minus 65 days. It is 65 days plus or minus 2 days. And if you have diestrous, it is 57 days plus or minus 1 day. So 56 to 58, hence why we want diestrous. So 63, 65, 57. There you go. Jill just put it in there. Thank you, Jill. It's awesome. Okay. I have a question that was mailed in. And I thought this was a good question to discuss. Would it be possible to remind me, this is from Cindy Stokas. Are you on, Cindy? Remind me what I need to watch and clean for on an about to be bred bitch that lives with my other three dogs, but stays in a clean area outdoors and indoors, except for car trips and occasionally the vet. One dog goes to training weekly at a strict facility and scent work trials. So there is no facility that's strict enough when you have dogs in and out. Stop going to the trials once she's confirmed pregnant. Any other watch outs? I live in Northwest Wisconsin in a ruralish area. Keep them all fenced. Started watching shoes that she wears and things like that. So I think the thing we all have to think about when it comes to biosecurity is that we are lucky until we aren't lucky. And that's just the way it works. So you might actually breed and show dogs through pregnancies for 20 years and never have a problem. It's when a specific pathogen, and what pathogen that is going to vary, that hits your dogs and gets transferred to your bitch and gets transferred to your puppies when things go awry. And so it all, your decision on how much you're going to show and train your dogs is how much of a risk taker are you? How much is protecting these puppies completely important to you? How important is that to you? So I've trained and shown, well, I've had pregnant bitches, but I know I was lucky that nothing happened. And I think that's the most important thing, that we realize it isn't because of what we're doing. If we've got dogs leaving the property and coming back and leaving the property and coming back, it's always risky. Now, it may be a risk that you're willing to take. And there's, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. If you have, say you breed 2 litters a year and you show, you're not going to get much showing in because you're going to have a pregnant bitch or you're going to have puppies at home a huge amount of that time. And so just recognize that just because you've been okay doesn't mean that it's going to be okay. And so, you know, what are the issues? I will often downplay kennel cough. I'm sure you've read on the Facebook group that I will often, I don't poo-poo it. Kennel cough's a real disease, but it's a disease caused by many, many different pathogens and they have different impact. But it can be really serious. It can be a very serious disease. We have the new coronavirus strain. Actually, we now have 2 coronavirus strains. So we have a new canine coronavirus, and we actually now know that the UK variant on COVID can affect dogs. And so those are URIs. Those are a kennel cough type of disease, and they would probably be very serious if your bitch had it or she had it while she was young. Had young puppies. So ideally, you don't have dogs that leave your property or dogs that come into your property, but that may not be realistic for you. So you're going to do the best you can. You're going to separate the dogs. You're going to make sure that the bitch airs in an area away from your other dogs. Ideally, they don't interact. And what are you looking for? You are looking for the dogs that go out, go off property, to have a runny nose, to cough, or to have diarrhea. Those are going to be your 3 key signs, you know, or, you know, serious lethargy or something like that. But your main signs are going to be an upper respiratory infection or a GI infection. And so vomiting, diarrhea, runny nose, coughing, anything along those lines would be something that mean that your bitch is at risk. So I don't have the perfect answer for you. I know a lot of us show, a lot of us train, a lot of us compete with our dogs. A lot of us, some of us, I won't say a lot, but some of us have to air our dogs off the property. You know, you don't live in a place where your dogs can stay on your property the whole time. It's always going to be a risk. Cindy, what I think you said something. Not a risk taker.
Yeah, Gail, does that mean that I should start before she's bred or just when she's bred? Because I have 2 competitions and I anticipate that those will be over before she'll be bred, since they're in the next week and a week to 2 weeks.
If she's been a dog that's out and about, has she been out in public and gone? Say it again.
She's not, but she goes regularly to her groomers. It's a small private groomer, but still there's obviously other dogs there.
Yeah. So, you know, what we're always looking for is a bitch that has been introduced to pathogens in her life. So she's been out, and that's good. We want that in our bitches. It's the bitches that stay home all the time that are at a greater risk. So really focus on while she's pregnant and while she has puppies.
Okay.
That's I wouldn't worry prior to that.
Okay.
Good luck. I'm excited for you.
Thank you. Thank you. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, I bet. I can't wait to see him. You have the cutest puppies. Kathleen says, can kennel cough early in pregnancy affect the puppies? Unlikely. You know, there are many forms of kennel cough, as I said, and, you know, that includes canine flu. It includes a wide Bordetella, parainfluenza. There's a lot of things that cause kennel cough. But for most bitches who have sort of lived a normal public life, it's not an issue in early pregnancy. It's actually usually for the vast majority of the pathogens that cause kennel cough, it's not a problem through pregnancy. there are a few pathogens that hit a bitch when her immunity is down. So pregnancy suppresses immunity. And so we might have a bitch that's at greater risk, and then we run into to problems. But really the risk from kennel cough, typically, not canine flu, which is pretty suppressed right now in the US and Canada, but kennel cough in puppies a week old or older can be problematic. Those early days, it appears that the bitch's immunity protects the puppies, but it tends to rapidly diminish. And so, you know, when you have 1 week, 2 week old puppies, you don't want your other dogs that are leaving the property and coming in and interacting, because kennel cough is contagious prior to showing symptoms. And that's always our issue. Sarah says, what's the time frame that you would be watching for these in a returning dog? A couple weeks. It's the biggest problem. Some issues will show up very quickly. Often if it's a GI infection, you'll see it within a couple days, but the upper respiratory infections can take longer. And so, you know, if you've got a pregnant bitch, ideally, if you can simply not have them interact, or you can have them interact after 14 days, it's probably pretty safe. Would the sire's dam's litter size possibly be a gauge to his potential fertility? I don't think so, Janet. I think his semen is going to give you a much better idea of his potential fertility than what his parents did. You know, especially when you think about it, if anybody's on, say, the canine fertility list or any of the big fertility lists, you can see how bad timing is. Like, just how horrendously bad people time breedings. So you can't say, okay, this was 6 years ago when we knew even less about timing, and we're going to blame the sire or the sire's mother or father for the size of a litter, when we have no idea how that litter was timed. And so, no, I don't think I would put that as an issue. I would look at his semen and his production rate. So Misha asks, how much of an issue is COVID for our dogs? And is there a vaccine? There is no vaccine right now for dogs. So up until, I think, about the last 6 weeks, the thinking was that COVID was transferred to dogs at very, very, very low rates, like 0.000, however many zeros percent. But the UK variant, which is obviously the one that is the most contagious and is rising, becoming more dominant, does appear. And I meant to post earlier today the study that I think just came out of the University of Texas, or I think UT, about dogs that are getting COVID from owners that have COVID. And it does appear that it is close interaction for an extended period of time. So we have no vaccine for our dogs. This is brand new information. I think Whole Dog Journal just put it out this week, and the study was recently done. So I hate to say it, and this to me just feels very hard, that if you have COVID, you have to stay away from your dogs. And I know that's probably the moment that we want to be with our dogs. Like, we can't be with anybody else, so we kind of want our dogs there to support us. But it appears, especially if you have the UK variant, that that may be problematic for your dogs. So I will pull that study and try to get it out tonight. I'm leaving very early tomorrow to take a puppy to Wisconsin. So I will shoot to get it done as soon as we wrap up here.
They're giving COVID vaccine to the great apes at San Diego Zoo. That came out several weeks ago. They've been doing it for a while because they did actually catch it from their caretakers.
So
yeah, I had seen that. So it seems like the great apes and the cats, both domestic mm-hmm. cats and lions and tigers.
Well, and Dr. Cindy told me when the COVID stuff first started, because Craig, her husband, is a cat vet exclusively, they were getting remdesivir. I can't
yeah,
even say
yeah, it. That the antiviral thing.
Yeah, from China, actually. They were, because they were able to bring it in and use that on cats for the coronavirus in cats, and it was working before that. They were losing them and stuff. So that had some hope. It wasn't a vaccine, but obviously treatment and stuff for it. So
yeah, so yeah, exactly. So maybe remdesivir is the an option for the dogs. I didn't see anything in the research that I read on treatment in dogs. In fact, most of the dogs I don't think had symptoms. They just were tested and found to be carrying it. So warning to all of us, and obviously if you have friends that get COVID, you know, you hate to tell people to not have their dogs in with them, but it's probably a wise thing to do right now. Hopefully they have Netflix or something. So Trish has a golden question. Which thyroid tested MSU, thinking of what we list on canine data? So Michigan State University, in my opinion, does the best thyroid test out there. It is the full panel, Trish, which I think is 6 tests. T4, free T4, T3, free T3, TGAA, TG.
I haven't done years, and the last time I ever looked, it was so confusing which one you choose that I couldn't figure it out, but there's 6 of them. Okay.
Yeah. So it should be 6 components to the test. And I would, are you just testing for breeding stock, or are you testing because there might be symptoms? Oh,
just for breeding stock. I was thinking, because I did the whole thing at VGL, so it duplicated some tests I already had, but I did it on Indian lavender and stuff, because I'd never tested for the eye thing before. They're all clear for everything.
PRCD, PRA, PRA1, yeah. PRA2, central PRA. Oh yeah, we got all the diseases you would possibly want.
Oh, I thought, well, maybe I should think about adding thyroid. And then what's the dentition one that's on there? What was that?
I think that's pretty bogus. So the OFA dentition is you go to a vet and they look at your dog's dentition and they fill out the little form that just has the jaw on it. And I don't know, maybe vets are really good at dentition. I actually have never asked my vet to confirm dentition, but that's it. It can be a GP, it can be anybody to confirm they have all their teeth and they're in the right place.
Okay. We used to have a doggy dentist here who actually, that's what he specialized in, I think, and his wife was internal medicine. They were really good, but after enough years they don't have their practice anymore, but they were really good at doing stuff, you know. So
yeah, I just don't know how valid it is, you know.
Okay.
It's a good thing to evaluate dentition. I just don't know how valid the OFA.
AKC question. After a certain number of litters, our stud dog needs to have DNA on file at AKC?
It's 5.
But I thought, so how do I find out about that or go about that? He doesn't have 5, but I thought maybe he will.
Yeah. So if you search for that, they'll send you the kits, and they've got a DNA panel that they run. It's actually one of the easier panels to run through the AKC.
Okay.
And it's just cheek swabs, and you'll send it in, and they just do, it's not a very complex test, but it's not difficult to do.
Yeah, I thought maybe just one of those things to do before you ever get there and actually need it.
Well, yeah, because you don't want to be at 4 or 5 and now you can't register the puppies because you didn't do the DNA test.
Okay. Cool.
Agree. Sarah says, I work as a dog trainer. I plan on using class dogs for demo dogs instead of personal dogs. That is me leaving to work with other dogs and returning going to cause concerns. So it can, Sarah. Some of the most important steps you can do is change your clothes. either before you get in the house, which might entertain your neighbors tremendously, or in your garage, or right inside the door to your house. And shoes, 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 shoes. Shoes are just so important to leave outside, leave in the garage, or clean every time you come in. Shower, especially if you have young puppies, and change your clothes and just wash them. So we can carry, in particular, we can carry kennel cough. We can carry kennel cough and give it to dogs that have never been outside of the home. So we want to make sure that we are washing our hands, washing our hands. If we haven't heard that enough in the last 15 months, you have really missed a lot. And change your clothes and watch your shoes. Lori says, Lori, are you still on? I'd like to share on how poop lessons saved a life. Oh, I want to hear this story, Lori. Hey.
Hi there. It's actually a human life, but it worked out very well. Yes. So I've been watching all your videos, and my iPhone has a weird glitch where if I have a tab open, even if the phone's off, where there's a video, it just randomly starts playing it whenever. I don't know. So I just decided to just roll with it when it started happening at the grocery store even.
Listening to All About Poop?
Oh, and in the home, there was the ones to do with sperm collection. And my husband looked at me with collecting dead or using dead dog semen. What is this? But anyway. Not collecting, but I was in the grocery store, and I just decided, okay, it keeps going on, I'm just gonna just roll with it. And I just, this is really funny, but at least I'm learning while I'm going around the store. And it was just odd that this poop one kept coming on, and I just watched it. Well, that night, my oldest daughter, who's a young adult, she had just been at a sandwich place and came home and said, I'm not feeling too good. But she's a tough, stoic kind of person. And she has a room and a big living space in our basement. And kind of like a sick dog, she just disappeared for a few days and thought it would pass and just wanted to ride it out. And she wasn't keeping me aware of what was going on. Well, Thursday morning, she told me she had been having fever, sweating through her sheets, and bloody diarrhea. Well, I didn't realize how bad it was, and I wanted to get her in to a hospital, but she was just, no, I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be fine. I have to go to work tomorrow. No, no, no. I showed her your poop video that showed the little poop emojis with the colors and the, and so things start, I had to leave it in her own, you know, make it, let it be her decision, but I wanted it to sink in. And I made her promise, you know, if she changed her mind, or if by Friday it wasn't changed, because she was supposed to go to work that day and I didn't see how it was even possible, to let me know. Friday, she goes, I'm glad you showed me that video. I think I'm dying. Take me to the hospital. So I took her to, I drove her a bit of a distance to get to the one in the big city where there's a good GI hospital. And because of COVID, I wasn't allowed to go in with her. So, you know, normally I'd be advocating whatever, but I was outside waiting as she was going through triage, and there was a student doctor asking her questions. And she had me on the phone listening, but they couldn't hear me because I wasn't on speaker. And I heard him asking certain questions. And she, oh, yeah, yeah. When he asked, are there streaks? And I'm in the background going, no, he's wondering if it's like hemorrhoids or something. That's not what you're going through. Then I told her after, I said, you need to clarify that. And I used your wording that helped give me the language to what I was seeing. And said to her, tell him it's gelatinous, it's like raspberry jam. You know, and you had indicated in your lesson about how that's a big emergency, right?
Absolutely.
So you know, he came back and we're thinking of sending you home. You know, usually it's a virus and this should pass. And I said, check her heart rate. So her iWatch was showing that her heart rate was more than double her normal heart rate. And he checked it. They had given her an IV bag. And he goes, oh, it is high. I think you're still dehydrated. We're going to give you another bag. And then I said to him, I'd like her to be admitted and there to be further investigation. So later on, I found out they did admit her. She's still in the hospital, by the way. She was severely dehydrated. It turned out, of all things, she ended up with C. difficile.
And it was just
brutal. And we found out there were three other people who had ate at that same sandwich place that had ended up in hospital and a bunch of others who became sick.
Wow.
So, yeah. So she's still there. She was severely dehydrated and she's on antibiotics and she's gradually getting better, but they want to keep her there for another day. I think she'll go home tomorrow. They just want to make sure she can, she'll be okay off the IV. But it was a life-threatening situation. I'm really serious. And it was like, I was laughing with my husband after. It's like, what? You know when I said this poop thing kept playing when everyone in my pocket? It was like, we're laughing. Is this some kind of divine intervention or what? It was just, listen to this. Meanwhile, little did I know, here was my daughter hiding off in the basement like an animal when they go off to die or something, not wanting to tell me. And she was going through some issue with what I was listening to. It was really interesting. So it was so informative. It really helped how it was just your graphics and everything. They really helped her understand and gave me the language to use. And yeah, thanks.
That's a crazy story, Laurie. And I hope
now at home they're sanitizing everything like crazy just to make sure it's safe to come home. And luckily our dogs don't even go in the basement, so it's, I don't know if it would pass to them anyways, but she didn't touch them, she was just hiding by herself. But yeah, can you imagine, it saved a human life too on top of
that's pretty funny that the little poop emoji was the saving grace there. That
you put the information about this is an ICU thing when you need to take your dog in right away. Like I was persistent even as a mom on the phone with my kid in Emerge without me there and just insisting that this keep getting looked into. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Oh yeah. My gosh. What a crazy, crazy story. So here you go, guys. If you haven't watched All About Poop, watch All About Poop. Craziest class I have ever produced, but good learning experience. I hope she is home tomorrow, Laurie.
Thank you. Yeah, her color's coming back, so that's nice, because she's olive tone and she was just white as a ghost. So,
and yeah, C. diff is nothing to mess with.
Horrible. Yeah, so I don't think we'll go to that sandwich place ever again.
I don't think I would either. No. Definitely not.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you for sharing that. Couple of other questions from Misha and Lynn about COVID, about the Brazil variant. I have not seen any recent research on the Brazil variant and survival rate with dogs with COVID. I think it's extraordinarily high. I've only read of maybe two dogs that have died of COVID, and who knows whether it was just the virus or whether it was something else. So, I don't think we know enough about the UK variant at this point to know if it's going to increase the death rate or the illness rate. But for now, there isn't a lot of evidence that dogs get serious disease. There is some evidence in cats, but not dogs. So I think generally we're okay. We just have to watch these new variants. Question from Terry. Girl is finally in season, planned to breed, missed last two times, found thyroid was low, but now at a good level. She is now 5. Repo recommends we do a surgical so we can take a look at her uterus. Stud dog is older, has good numbers, but not a lot of fluid. So he suggests not doing several collections. what would be the best timing for a surgical, other thoughts. So Terry, I don't know if you're on, but we have in the timing your breeding, using LH and progesterone to time your breedings, we have a pretty explicit spreadsheet on how to time a frozen. It's in your breeding diary. I'm looking to see Terry. Terry, are you unmuted?
I think so.
Yeah.
It won't be frozen though. That's why I wasn't real sure.
Because I
have to go back and take a look again at some of the others information. But I remember that there was a lot about frozen, but not necessarily about freshly collected.
But it's
is it still the same?
Moderate quality fresh, right? Because of the
The numbers
he doesn't
are
have much
good.
For static.
Yeah, that's what it was. It wasn't, he said, if he's trying to do a natural, which we weren't going to anyway, there's not a lot to propel it inside up into her. So, but he said otherwise the motility and everything else, all those other numbers looked good.
Well, then you do have some flexibility and you could probably, I would probably consider basing it on the fresh chilled semen. I would not do the fresh semen because he does have an effect with the prostatic fluid, the low prostatic fluid. So I would go with the fresh chilled or the frozen timing. You know, the optimal timing of all semen types is LH plus 6, but it depends upon whether you want to do LH testing or whether you're just going to do progesterone testing. Given you're doing a surgical, I highly recommend you do progesterone testing. I don't know if you do that commonly.
Yes, I do all that. And it's very reasonably priced. I can do that easily. The LH, don't I have to do that really twice a day, pull blood a day?
Not really. Frozen. So you can do it once every 24 hours. It might be iffy. You might not catch it. But typically, if we know when the negative tests are and we know what the progesterone is, if you post it on the list, we can get pretty close to your LH peak. The biggest challenge, obviously, is missing Sundays on draws. That's always our killer because inevitably the LH peak is on a Sunday. It happens far more than 1 out of 7. So you don't have to do LH, especially with a fertile dog, but you are cutting her open. So you do want to time that surgery as closely as you possibly can. But you could put it in at LH plus 5. Because the semen is going to certainly stay around and be viable through, you know, her optimal fertilization day, unless it's Renee's bloodhounds, is going to be LH plus 6. But 4, 5, 6, 7 are all fertile days.
I've heard some folks have done an AI in advance of a surgical.
You can do that. Yep. Yeah, so you could do 4 and 6, day 4 and 6. So that's going to be 2 days after ovulation, which is going to be LH plus 4. And then 2 days later, do the surgical. The surgical, I would time as close to your optimal fertilization day as you can, because that gets the semen into the uterus as close as possible to the eggs. The AI, you know, they're gonna extend it. So they'll replace the prosthetic fluid with extender, and that will assist in propelling the sperm. So you could easily do that day 4.
So any concern though, if he is an older boy, that's why he's saying maybe not collect that often, is two couple of days in between enough for him to regenerate?
It should be, yeah, especially if he's got good numbers. So, you know, we love older guys that still have good numbers, because you're going to get longer telomeres from the older guys. So we're all in on older boys. And it sounds like his numbers are good. He's just low in prosthetic fluid, but we can replace that with extender. We just can't do that in a natural. Right. You know, you've got to collect him, extend it, and then put it back in. So I don't think that would be a concern at all if his numbers are good.
Okay. Excellent.
Good luck.
Thank you. Fingers crossed, toes crossed.
Yeah, absolutely. We're good at that. Okay. Lynn Grossman saying she's birthing 38 lambs. Oh, Lynn, we so need those pictures. We absolutely need pictures. And if you put pajamas on them, you get extra credit. That's the best. Okay, guys. Looks like we're at the end of the questions. Let me just check and make sure nothing else is mailed in. Oh, I did have one more question. I will wrap in the last few minutes. It was submitted by Kathleen D. Kathleen asked me about my experiment with early neurologic stimulation. If you heard me talk, I guess last year, that we had a contingent of Avidoggers who believed that doing early neurologic stimulation or biosensor was detrimental to their puppies and was causing higher stress levels in adulthood, et cetera. So I said I was going to experiment with that. Alas, I've only had two puppies since then. So I did not experiment with that this time, but hopefully this year we will have a larger litter and we will be able to experiment with it. But 0-2 on this. Has anybody else tested it and done half a litter or anything like that? Jump on if you have. No, everybody's shaking their head. Jen, did you?
Well, I only have two as well, but I'm going to do that on this litter. I'm going to just do a minor things, you know, and see. I don't know. It's hard to tell. Like you say, one litter of two, not going to probably be able to tell too much. But
yeah, it's really going to take all of us doing a number of litters across a number of breeds to really figure it out. You know, honestly, one of the things I'm really hoping in Good Dog, they have a really strong research bent. And if there is anybody who's going to help breeders do research on things like ENS and oral calcium and things like that, I think it's going to be Good Dog. And so maybe this is something we can test and really get some numbers on it, because we just can't make assumptions without the numbers.
Gail, didn't the military Superdog program run the numbers on the research, and they're the ones that concluded that it was detrimental to the puppies?
They didn't conclude it was detrimental. So the Superdog program did not last long. It lasted about 7 months, sounded much cooler than it ended up being. You know, when you say Superdog, you don't often say that it was disbanded because they felt like it didn't work. But the problem we have with that is that ENS was only a small part of what they were doing. And so there's really no way for us to tease out all of the other things that they were doing with those dogs that ended up being unsuccessful. And frankly, Steve and I were in the Army long enough to know it could have been a change in the general that was overseeing the program. It could have been a congressman that came in and said, nope, we're not doing that anymore. It is really difficult to look at that short-lived program and say that it failed or succeeded based on that short 7 month period. But the military instituted it in attempting to make fabulous military working dogs or MWDs and disbanded it pretty quickly. Carmen Battaglia just happened to show up early in that program, and that's when he brought it into the world of purebred dogs, but it's still completely untested. So I read about it in May of 1995, and it's still completely untested. So we really do need to put the effort into evaluating whether it's of value or not. I've always said in the past that it can't hurt, And it really was avidoggers that brought it forward and felt that it was hurting. So I don't have an answer on that. I've done it mm-hmm. since May of 1995.
I have a question about it then. Hang on, Kelsey.
Sorry. I stopped several years ago, and I can say that our dogs that have gone into working organizations have a higher graduation rate. But we've also changed other things too. But for me, I never really cared for how stressed it made my bitch and the fact that I had to remove her because of that stress. And then I'm sure there was some residual when she came back to the puppy.
Absolutely. Yeah, that we know. You know, we know that those stress hormones get passed into the milk. That's really interesting. I can't say our bitches care enough. They're like, yeah, whatever. Flip them upside down. That's really interesting. But, you know, there is good evidence that cortisol gets passed into the milk and affects the puppy. So that could be it. Somebody else jumped on.
Oh, that was me. I just had a litter of 10. Today is going to be the first day of ENS. So I could attempt to do something here. Half and half or whatever, but how would we follow through on that? Because they are all going to go to live in different families, different states, different, you know, how would we test that it was doing the, you know, I don't have to, like, I couldn't pair up one with and one without to go to the same family for five different families or anything like that. They're going to 10 different families. How would we know?
Yeah. It's going to take a huge number of puppies across many breeding programs. So, you know, it would be intriguing to do five and five for you and get a feel at, do you APET? Do you do the APET?
I do.
Yeah. So, you know, what are you looking for? Generalized fear, stress level, things like that in the APET. But you're right, you know, 10 puppies isn't going to be enough to assess it, but it would be an interesting.
I could do that.
Yeah. So you're just, but you have to randomly pick them. So it can't be first five, last five. It can't be the five biggest and the five smallest. You're just going to draw straws or something.
Okay.
And stick with those five. And then let us know at the APED or after the APED.
You can do that. And hey, yeah. And that's what Kelsey was saying too, as far as the stress and the mom, my moms sometimes care the first day or two. And after that, they're just like, yeah, whatever.
Whatever, like what take them all.
Yeah, whatever. I'm going to leave the room now since you're in here.
Exactly. Can I take a break?
Exactly.
Talking out for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, if the bitch was stressed, that would certainly have an impact.
It would
have an impact. Yeah. Give it a try. And then, Carolyn, I would say, you know, you want to check back in with those people at 6 months.
Okay.
And get a feel for stress level in the puppies, because the impact is most
form that I could send out to them or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm hoping through Good Dog. I know in ITDB, I recommend CBARC, the University of Pennsylvania Canine Behavioral Assessment, something questionnaire that James Serpel developed. But I'm hoping we can, it's difficult for breeders to get now, or it's challenging. They don't have the best system. So I'm hoping we can make it much more accessible through Good Dog, that all breeders can use it. And that would be a great assessment tool, Carolyn.
Awesome.
Very terrific. Good. Let us know. Good luck.
I will.
10 babies.
Yeah, I'll have my husband stick their little colors into the computer tonight, do a random selection, and we'll start doing it.
Perfect. Perfect. And then you only have to do five.
Exactly. It'll be so much faster and easier.
But do ESI on everybody. Just saying.
Do what?
Do early.
Yeah, the ESI for sure.
Yeah.
That's always their favorite. If they're squealing during the ENS, they stop as soon as the ESI starts. They're just like, this is new. This is great.
I have to say, I do love doing ESI. Although my little red puppy in this litter pretty much hated everything I gave her. I don't like grass. I don't like dirt. I don't like birds. I don't like lemons. It was just like, no.
I had one like that in my last litter,
I rightly get like a plus or an X or just a line. If you know, like they liked it, they couldn't have cared less, they hated it. And I have one girl who had an X across every single thing that she clothed. And the clothes, she dove into it. She
really
loved it. Yeah.
It's gonna be a great scent work dog. She's gonna there pass her few first tests. I love it. Well, good luck with them.
Thank you.
Okay, guys, we've gone on way too long, as always, but wonderful to see everybody. Thank you for those of you who put your puppies up while we were talking. It always makes me happy to see everybody's babies and their big dogs. And so we have our webinar on the 22nd at 1 o'clock. We're going to cover the top APET traits. This is my evaluation of the most important traits that we should use to match puppies on. So that's going to be things like forgiveness. We're going to spend a fair amount of time on forgiveness, environmental awareness, energy level, etc. So be there, be square. And then I will be sending you an email about the calls that we'll have with Good Dog, talking about sort of what does the future look like. So thank you all for joining us tonight. It was wonderful to see you. And I will see you on Facebook. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.